You typically release, as we say in our industry, folks put out bad news late on a Friday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because they figure
it's
it doesn't get a lot of
wash.
Attention, right? We sometimes even lose track, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody going to lose track of this one.
So how many of you guys have said that you did not know about these financial support documents from 2020?
This is how the last school board news conference ended.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
8:13 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Text WATCH to 855-616-1620 if you want to watch along with us. And remember, we podcast every moment of the show. We've had a stacked show so far, and it continues right now. So you can check out the podcast page wherever you get your podcasts. Bravo's Top Chef on TV now, continuing right here in Wisconsin.
I'm Kristen Kish, and this season, we're shaking things up.
We're in Wisconsin, but what do you think we're going to see this year?
You know, going into Wisconsin, going to Milwaukee, there's going to be cheese, there's going to be bratwurst.
I need dairy.
And beer.
And a lot of beer.
Episode 12. Aired Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have, I thought we had just one more, Sandy. So we have two more.
14.
Okay. 14
episodes
in
total. Yeah. It seemed like such a long stretch back in March when we were at the red carpet party celebrating this series coming to Wisconsin.
More,
but I feel like it's flown by.
Yes. From our local chef, Dan Jacobs of Dan Dan fame, and more great scenes from Milwaukee and Wisconsin on display for fans of the show across the country. Did we decide, are we doing spoilers? We are, right? Like,
if people are listening, that's because they have been following this very closely.
Yeah, right. Okay.
We'll save the big spoiler on whether or not Chef Dan is still with it.
Okay.
The one spoiler we can tell you is that Chef Paul Bartolotta was part of last night's show, and that was one of the most heartwarming, nice parts of the show, because they used Ristorante Bartolotta as a wonderful location. When you think about it, that restaurant's been in Tosa since 1993.
I mean,
that's 30 years now, 31 years. I just feel like it's always been there. It was like, oh.
I grew up there. Like, that was a cornerstone there on that spot when there wasn't a lot going down in the village area of Tosa. And I remember that was a big deal when that moved in there, and their staying power is fantastic.
So Chef Paul Bartolotta shows up as the guest judge for the blind taste test quick fire challenge, and they have fun with that. But then he invites all the chef testants. There are five left right now, and then the judges. It was almost like him opening his home to have a meal together, to talk, say, hey, look how far we've gone in this journey. And his sister is there, who's also the head of catering, Maria. The executive chef, Juan, is there, like serving tableside. So it really was this nice, Wisconsin nice, but moment that also celebrated the dedication and the passion one has to still be in the restaurant business for 30 years. And the key to longevity is constantly changing, as Paul said.
In all the restaurants, it's always about change and development, pushing yourself to find your voice in cooking. And for you guys, it's going to be really interesting to see how your personal voices come through in your food.
I love that music in the background.
Well, that's what I mean. So it really was
produced
this, for as high drama as the, because this is now getting to the finals. We're down to the final four. And this really is, like, you saw Chef Dan serious face, sweating.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Like, this wasn't all the, how's it going, chef? 5 minutes. You know, this was not as jovial. Like, this is, eyes are on the prize for all these folks. And you laugh about the music, Eric, but you think about the tradition that is in the Bartolotta family, and that restaurants and cooking, it really is a family affair for them. And Chef Paul even talked about the beginnings.
My father actually did most of the cooking when I was growing up. He was from a village on the northern coast of Sicily. And then I fell in love with cooking because there was a restaurant right up the street here. It was my first job to be able to earn money, take girls out on dates. So that was the main thing. And then my brother said, let's do something together. He wanted to open a restaurant.
That's cool. I don't know that I knew even all of that story. And I could have asked Paul any time.
Well, so, I'd be happy to talk to you about
it. If you have a question for Paul, he'll be my guest on What's on Tap tonight at 6. He's going to hang out with me for that first half hour talking about the journey so far. And beyond Top Chef, talk about summer dining and flavors and, you know, that sort of thing.
And did I hear that right, too, that, like, Dan actually kind of was mentored a little bit by Bartolotta. Like he looks up to him as a leader of sorts.
It is a wonderful discovery to find out what a community of chefs we have here. At the watch party I was at last night in Zocalo, Chef Kyle Canal was there. He's of Birch. And he was one of the guest judges last night. So this was really like the birds came home to roost at this one, because there are a lot of returning judges who came to be part of the meal at Harbor House. So it really was this nice bookend to the 12 episodes so far. But I got a chance to talk with Kyle after the party last night, and I asked him some questions that he didn't want to go on the record for. Like, so how was that dish? And which one was your favorite? So I respect that, you know. But I respect his openness, too. But he's talking about how much fun he had it. He was part of the Cucina Showcase at Festa Italiana last night, and how he's friends with Adam Pollack of Egg and Flour. Just how really all these chefs are supporting each other. They want a scene. They don't want to be like, oh, well, you go to Dan Danwell, you should be at my restaurant. There's none of that vibe. It really is celebratory.
And I remember both the Bartolottas talking about that over the years was, you know, this is an industry where, you know, the success of one can float the other boats. I mean, so as collegial as it sounds, like, these guys are also competitors.
Right? Yeah. Oh, yes.
But at the same time, right, knowing the visibility that has come to Milwaukee and to our foodie scene and stuff because of this, that's going to help the Bartolottas. It's going to help the others.
And it's competition in this creative way. Not, oh, you do a best cheeseburger, I'll do a better cheeseburger than you. It's what are my unique flavors? What can I evolve into?
Okay, so two episodes left
Yes. And unfortunately, it was the Last Supper at Harbor House. I hate to say that. I didn't realize that the whole series would not be in Wisconsin. These last two episodes on a Caribbean cruise ship going to Curacao.
But they could take it from port here, Milwaukee
That's
port.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, right. Great Lakes cruise.
I'll say I'm only slightly disappointed, but I will give you a hint, whether or not you want the spoiler. There is a Wisconsin reason to watch next week.
No, baby.
Fair enough. And your show tonight?
6 o'clock. What's on Tap with Chef Paul Bartolotta and more Top Chef Takeaway.
Thanks, Sandy.
I think it's actually huge. I think it's going to change the way our chef testants play the game.
When I say win, you say Wisconsin. Win!
Wisconsin! Woo!
A lot happening with the RNC this week. They're building the stage out at Fiserv Forum. In fact, the Republican National Convention has officially taken over Fiserv Forum now as they do the build out. You got the director of the U.S. Secret Service in town this week, Kim Cheadle. She's going to be touring venues for the RNC. And then we also expect an update today from the U.S. Secret Service and local law enforcement on preparations for that July event in Milwaukee. Are we waiting to hear anything big yet in terms of security footprint or other stuff?
I mean, we have
stuff?
A pretty good idea of what now, the footprint looks like.
So I had an interesting conversation about that with Father Mike Bertram of Capuchin Community Services. What's all this got to do with the friars over there? Well, they're the folks who, among other things, they run St. Ben's Community Meal. And so many folks, I remember when I was a kid in Wauwatosa, that was the thing that we did with our church. Every now and then we go down and volunteer, and it was an important connection to downtown and to that mission. It's on the western edge of downtown Milwaukee, and they are taking steps to stay ahead of the convention to not only keep serving that meal because they are right up against the security footprint, but also to protect the guests who count on them.
The security zone runs right along 9th Street, and we are on that block. Yeah. We are on State Street between 9th and 10th, so it bumps directly up to our property. We will conduct the meal because we recognize that the poor, our guests that come to us, they really need that just to live. We're going to have to do some careful communication with the folks so that they understand, you know, come in from the north, come in from the west, but hopefully we can direct folks so that they can still get to St. Ben's. And most people are pretty savvy. I mean, they'll find a way to get there. We just want to protect them against some of the security boundaries that are there.
And for your volunteers and your suppliers as well.
Correct. Yep. But we think we can do it. We really want to make sure that we don't disrupt that important service, that important ministry to the poor.
So you've got about 150 to 200 people who end up at St. Ben's every night, and they're looking at how to get them that meal, keep doing their thing. And I think it would have been easy for the Capuchin Friars to say, you know, listen, we've got the RNC.
We'll just shut it down that way.
Yeah, we're sorry. Or you could come to some other location. But
we'll work remotely like other businesses are going to.
Right, I guess. Yep, I can't come in. Right. But they're truly so committed to serving the people of this community that not only are they not saying any of that, but they're going to expand their operations around St. Ben's.
We don't want folks just, you know, straying into the security zone and then possibly getting into trouble. And many of the folks have mental illness. So they really trust us. They'll come to us. They appreciate what we offer. So we're really ramping up our services for that week just so that we can protect the guests that come to us and really make their lives a little easier and more comfortable.
So they are going to operate St. Ben's not only as that nightly community meal, but then what they're going to do is they were a cooling shelter during the day. So they're hoping that folks will stay with them. And then they're working to provide overnight guest services as well.
Easier just to keep them in-house.
That's what Father Mike was saying. He's saying, like, some of their typical guests might end up confused. You have a big homeless population here in Milwaukee that if they're walking around in and around downtown, all of a sudden there's all this security. You don't want them tangling with law enforcement. Law enforcement's going to be rightly on high alert, ramped up, right? And you don't want misunderstandings. You don't want any of that stuff. So he said, you kind of see where I'm going with this.
We really haven't navigated with anybody. We've just taken the directives that have been set up by the National Convention. So we work with that, and we think we can do well with that. We've talked with staff and everything. We're getting public relations out. We're going to ask the public for some extra help because we really are adding extra services to this. We've got a wonderful core of volunteers that love St. Ben's and love the ministries that are there. So we really feel confident that we can offer this to the poor. We really want to offer this to our guests so that, again, convention can be confusing for many of us, that they can be comfortable and safe.
So let me help Father Mike out, and you can too. The Capuchin Walk for the Hungry is on the opening night of Polish Fest. I've talked with them over the years when I was anchoring the noon show at TMJ4. They would always come on and talk about it. Really important event for them and for their ministry. This year, it's June 14th. It's an easy walk, so this isn't competitive in any way. I think the walk's only like a mile or so. And you get in with a donation, and there's a bunch of stuff for you in it if you help out.
It's just a mile. If people want 2 miles, that's fine. You get a free pass to Polish Fest for the whole weekend. You get a voucher for some refreshments there on the grounds after the walk is done. It's a great event, but really, my thanks to the many people that support us through that simple walk, because, boy, that income is so important for us, just for our services to the poor.
So that would be, again, June 14th on the Summerfest grounds. They step off at 5:30. You can even register day of the event. And again, today, more on the RNC security from the U.S. Secret Service and local law enforcement later today. 8:28 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
On behalf of the American people, and as Commander-in-Chief, it's the highest honor to be able to salute you here in Normandy.
President Biden, among more than two dozen world leaders this morning, marking 80 years since the invasion of Normandy. Allied forces, of course, storming the beaches of Normandy and, not going to sugarcoat it, saving the world, really, from Nazi Germany. Of course, they had been in France at that time. Many of those veterans literally mowed down as they got onto the beach. Many of them not even getting to the beach, drowning in the sea before getting there, is really arguably one of the most, if not the most, historic day in the world as far as where we live now and how things are going.
So interesting how the global landscape changed quickly thereafter, and yet how some things are still the same.
Right.
Right. Russia not invited to this particular affair.
Even though they were an allied force
right.
at the time.
So at the time, right, we aligned ourselves with Russia. We needed them to help, you know, push back the Nazi invasion in their own country and also help us in other spots. So that we were allies then. That quickly changed and turned. And now Russia is the aggressor on the global stage.
D-Day veterans also on hand today. Many of them were honored. Well, a local D-Day vet remembering the terror on the beach 80 years ago.
June 6th, it was very bad.
Floyd Sorensen was an 18-year-old Navy medic on D-Day, June 6th, 1944. He remembers it like it was yesterday.
It was noisy. It was smelly. The water was very, very rough.
Men died in his arms.
They were hurt in some cases so badly that there wasn't much you could do for them outside of giving them morphine or something to ease the pain.
He tells me one thing allowed him to survive.
If you never prayed before in your life, you're going to pray then.
John Mercier, WTMJ News.
And perhaps the moment that made me smile from the ceremony this morning, obviously a very somber ceremony, however.
And I'll stand beside you.
Tom Jones.
As long as
just knocking it out of the park.
Sounds fantastic.
I will hold back the
He spoke during a British memorial.
Let us pray. Such sacrifice need never be made again. And let us commit to carrying forward their resounding message.
King Charles there.
I will shadow the heat of your day. And I'll drink from the sweat of your brow. I will walk to the tune of your song, but I won't crumble with you if you fall.
This is your chance to be a professional baseball player.
People still don't recognize us.
For 5 minutes. Virtually, of course.
We're contenders now.
Welcome to Virtual Baseball on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Play ball!
Virtual Baseball is sponsored by Siding Unlimited. It's siding and a whole lot more. Honest pricing guaranteed. Visit SidingUnlimited.com.
Wow!
For grabs today, yeah. Pair of Brewers tickets to our winner, well, if he gets the job done.
We've got
Jeff in Hartford on the line with us. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Are you aware of how, I mean, we're going to explain it, but you aware of how virtual baseball works?
I played in the past when I played against somebody else, but not against you.
Ah, okay. New version.
Well, yeah, I'm rooting for you. So, E, go ahead and give us the rules.
There are 20 Brewers highlights labeled 1 through 20. You and Vince will play each other. You each will select 3 highlights from the same list of 20. Your score is determined by the number of runs scored in the highlights. So a 2-run home run means 2 runs for you. A double means nothing. You don't want a double. You want the 2-run home run.
Yeah, sure you do.
And there's no ghost runners or anything like that. You want those highlights that are run-scoring highlights. You can either be the home team or the away team. Which would you prefer?
I'll take the home team.
All right, that means you bat second.
Vinny's up first.
Vinny, let's have it.
Okay, highlight number one.
Number one today is William Contreras.
The 1-0 to Contreras. High fly ball, right field. Drifting back is Oliveras. This one should be playable in the corner. He goes into a dive, and he didn't make the catch.
Nope.
Frelick around third. He's headed for home. Contreras around second. He's on his way to third. And the Brewers lead it 10-1.
All right, so we get one.
Frelick crosses the plate. Well done.
All right, I'll take highlight number two.
Jackson Churio.
Wesneski deals. Fly ball right center. That's headed towards the gap. It is down and off the wall. Ortiz will score. An RBI double for Jackson Churio.
Yes, sir. All right. Another one scratched across.
All right. I want highlight number eight.
Number eight today is Reese Hoskins.
Lugo brings home the 1-0 pitch. Hoskins a drive out to center field. Back on it is Isbell at the track. Wall, bye-bye baseball!
Ooh.
Reese Hoskins takes Lugo deep, and the Brewers on top 1-0 here
right.
In the second.
Solo inning. Shot there.
All right, so Jeff, that's, I mean, kind of like the Brewers offense, right? One here, one there, one whatever.
Ding,
okay.
Dong, ding,
so
dong.
I got three. Is that,
yes,
is that your
you
count there?
Yes, you have three.
All right, I'm up 3-0,
right,
and Jeff is up to bat.
All right, I'll take number eight. I'm sorry, nine.
Number nine today is Bryce Terang.
Tommy Hunter deals again to right and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here! Gone! He just hit one out of here with the bases loaded.
Oh.
Bryce Terang.
Wow, that'll do it. Jeff wins on one swing of the bat.
Wow.
Well done. Congratulations. You get yourself, sir, a pair of Brewers tickets Got to hold on the line, though. Got to make sure that we get all your info.
Who are you taking to the game, Jeff?
Probably my wife, but maybe my son, my grandson. I'm not sure.
Hey, you got options.
Yeah, the only way you can get away with not taking the spouse is, well, you know, one of the kids, grandkids. Mm-hmm. So I like where your head is at there. I think you're good.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hang on the line, Jeff. Appreciate you listening. And Greg Pancake Hill, producer of the program, will get your info so we get you the Brewers tickets. We do virtual baseball every Thursday at this time. A freeze night to have at you.
We're going to have a little fun with you, Bob.
Go ahead.
How many times did you have more than 31 hits in a season?
I know you. You're swinging a bouncer back up the middle, and this one, thank you, is over.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma Brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Drake Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. This afternoon and this evening as well, chance of an isolated shower or sprinkle. Otherwise, pretty decent. High 73 today, low down to 54 tonight, and right now at 66 in Milwaukee.
So when do we hear from MPS again? Friday?
Tomorrow, they say.
Okay. Friday afternoon. Is that like a news dump type of thing?
No, I mean, you typically release, as we say in our industry, folks put out bad news late on a Friday, right?
Yeah.
Because they figure it doesn't get a lot of attention, right? We sometimes even lose track, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody going to lose track of this one.
Several of you guys have said that you did not know about these financial documents from 2020.
This is how the last school board news conference ended. And that was yesterday afternoon. MPS did update us on the progress they're making. They say they've already turned over some financial documents to the Department of Public Instruction. They're going to turn over more information later this week, and they expect that to be reviewed. So they're making progress in terms of getting that funding. I don't want to say restored because it hasn't necessarily been taken away, but DPI said, we're not giving you any money until we get the documents that we need. So sounds like they're on track to do that. But in terms of the transparency of the Milwaukee Public School Board, they hold this news conference. They send out the thing. We're going to have the news conference, whatever. They have two statements, and then they say, all right, we'll take two questions. And that's when you heard what you heard there was the reporters, and I give them a lot of credit. For like, what do you mean two questions? I've got 600 questions myself. And there are a lot of questions that they're still just flat not answering.
So if you were the PR strategist for the MPS school board, what would you have or what will you be telling them?
Well, so first, in terms of who does the talking, you have board president Marva Herndon, and she read a statement. That's fine. She's the president. But I would continue to roll out the VP. Gilly Gokul Gandhi is pretty well-spoken and seems to not get rattled by the questions being fired at her.
She was on Spending the State yesterday, too, with us.
Yeah. It was a pretty calm demeanor, and I would say, all right, VP Gokul Gandhi, you're going to go out there, you're going to do most of the talking, and you don't have to answer everyone if there are things that you can't say because there are some personnel issues in this and whatever. That's fine, but you're going to take every question, and you're going to wear these folks out. They're going to be tired and have to go meet their deadline, and you'll still be standing there saying, anything else? Anything else?
Yeah.
Anything else? Because otherwise, you know, that's the result. At the end of these, you see people running for their cars and it looks like you're hiding something. And there are questions that are unanswered. I respect that they're in this process of trying to figure out what went wrong. You can argue that they should have known that a long time ago. Neither here nor there. At this point, you got to stand and face the music. So if I were advising the board, that's what I would say is, all right, this is a good spokeswoman right here. Mm-hmm. She seems to handle this well. She sits out here and takes every question until they're exhausted.
And, you know, and I don't know if it plays in this case, but oftentimes a politician or a lawmaker will say, never let a good crisis go to waste. There is an opportunity to become a leader in a situation like this. Now, a difficult opportunity, but still one nonetheless.
MPS promising that other news conference tomorrow where they will continue the updates, and who knows how many questions are taken.
We realize there are a lot of questions right now,
and we're happy to provide information today.
Several of you guys have said that you did not know about these financial support documents from 2020.